Henry VIII had 6 wives. You probably know the rhyme. Divorced, beheaded, died. Divorced, beheaded, survived. But here's what the rhyme doesn't tell you. It doesn't tell you that he broke an entire country away from the Catholic Church because the Pope wouldn't let him leave his first wife. It doesn't tell you that he was pursuing the next woman while still married to the current one every single time. It doesn't tell you that by the end, no woman was choosing him. They were being commanded. And it definitely doesn't tell you that the women in this story, the ones history reduced to a nursery rhyme, were some of the most strategic, intelligent players in a game that was designed to give them nothing. Today, we're going through the affairs, the marriages, and the pattern of a man who had everything. The crown, the power, the church, and still couldn't keep a single woman happy. Because if you've ever heard someone say, "I'm too busy," as an excuse, this man was literally running England during the Reformation and still found time to write love letters for 6 years straight. We have the receipts. They survived. So yeah, if he wanted to, he would. And he did, repeatedly, while running England. I'm Nikki Corbett, and this is The Scarlet Edit, my signature series, Affairs Through the Ages. All right, as we dive into this story, I wanted to break it up in a way that made sense to really set the stage to talk about who Henry was, what it was like during that time, and who all of these women were. Because it's so easy when hearing these stories to think about them in now times and in what's going on today, when things were so much different over 500 years ago, that it makes more sense to make sure that we know the playing field that we're on. We know where things were at this time when Henry became king. So let's talk about him in his early years. He was born in June 28th, 1941. I think it is important, because I wouldn't be me if it wasn't, to say that he is a Cancer. Now, this is broad because it's the entire, you know, it's the entire group of people who land in the Cancer sign of the zodiac. It's not always exact for every single person, but I do think that it's kind of important to see what is a Cancer? Cancers are characterized by deep emotional intensity, high intuition, and a nurturing, protective nature. They can often be described as well as compassionate, loyal, and home-oriented, with a strong, sometimes sensitive personality. So I think that as we get into this story, it'll be safe to say that aside from intensity, I don't really think Henry fits. So Henry was actually the second son, so he was never supposed to be king. Henry had an older brother named Arthur, and Arthur was the heir to the throne. Unfortunately, Arthur died when he was 15, so when Henry was just 10, he became heir. Henry took the throne when he was 17 in 1509, and he was the first adult prince to inherit the throne peacefully in nearly 100 years. Lots of unrest at that time. Here's something that is interesting. When he was 17 years old, he was over 6 feet tall. Now, again, this is in the 1500s, but the average man was only 5'7 at that time. So he definitely stood out in a room. He was athletic. He composed music. He wrote poetry. He played multiple instruments. He excelled at jousting, hunting, tennis, wrestling. So, I mean, he was definitely a fit teenager. And I imagine that, you know, the ladies like to look at him. A Venetian ambassador called him the handsomest ruler I ever set eyes on. So this is funny to me. This was in my research, my initial research document, but it still makes me laugh. In his 20s, he had a 32-inch waist and a 39-inch chest. So we're talking like the V, right? He was fit. But get this. So by the time he died at 55, so this is also super sad that people died so young in this time. I mean, everybody involved in this story died at 55 or below. I think that he was actually the oldest, although his last wife did outlive him. But like, you just didn't make it that long back in these days. So by the time he died, he was estimated to weigh 392 pounds and had a 52-inch waist and a 53-inch chest. So he spent some time, he stopped working out and kept eating. But he did have some problems, which is super unfortunate. So he had chronic leg ulcers that never healed. I don't want to know what that looks like, but it made it so he couldn't walk unaided. So he was often carried through the palace corridors in a chair. When he was 45, he had a jousting accident and a horse fell on top of him and when he was in full armor. So, I mean, imagine back to that time where they wore like metal armor when they would be jousting on top of horses. And then he was unconscious from that accident for 2 hours. So to put it in perspective, 5 minutes of unconsciousness is considered major trauma today. So being unconscious for 2 hours definitely did something to his brain. Historians do argue that he had, you know, most likely had a traumatic brain injury. And those types of injuries can cause personality changes, aggression, and impulsivity. And moving forward, many years, but in 2016, a medical study also found evidence consistent with brain injury that would be amnesia, impulse control problems, and sociopathy. So when we think about all of that as we wind through this story, I mean, I definitely think that this brain injury played a role in how he acted in the last 10 years of his life compared to the first, you know, let's say 25 when he was like 20 to 45 before the accident. Also, they were saying that because he had to use a lot of ointments to treat his leg ulcers, that he could have had some lead poisoning as well. But when you really take a look at everything, it was probably all of it. Head trauma, dealing with chronic pain his entire life, being exposed to lead, getting very obese, and then having power that was unchecked, it probably led to who he was by the time the accident happened and ultimately by the time that he died. So let's think about it like this. Before 1536, he had one wife in 24 years. One. After 1536, he had five more wives in 11 years. Let's talk about what was going on in that time frame, because it definitely helps like set the stage for what was going on in the world and in England and how life was. So England had just come out of the War of the Roses, and that was a decades-long civil war. Because of where England was geopolitically, everybody around the world, every foreign power, they were all watching what was going on. So Henry, though, he internalized it as a spiritual mandate. So when he had wives that failed to produce sons, he saw it as God's judgment. And it gave him a theological excuse for his cruelty. Next, I want to talk about ladies in waiting, because this is such an interesting concept. So ladies in waiting, they were personal attendants and companions to the queen. They were not servants, and they were often from very noble or aristocratic families. Lady-in-waiting was a very prestigious position because it had so much proximity to the queen, and therefore it had proximity to the king. And so families would strategically place their daughters to be a lady-in-waiting because proximity at that time was the game, and it was how you got anything and anywhere in society. But what's interesting is that it's also how three of Henry's future wives ended up in his orbit. Another thing about how life was at that time is that women had almost no legal personhood. So wives were essentially property, and a queen's primary job was producing a male heir. And how fucked is this? Failure to produce a male heir was seen as her failing and possibly God's disfavor. So like, talk about stress. Like how awful. like, oh, hey, if you don't have a boy, it's your fault. And it's not even true. The woman doesn't determine the sex. The male, the sperm, determines the sex. So, like, what, it's her fault that the male sperm didn't find her egg fast enough once it was inside of her body? Like, that's so lame. Ugh. So yeah, women also, they couldn't own property, they couldn't initiate divorce, and they could not refuse a king's proposal. And that becomes very important as we move through the list of Henry's wives. So the system was essentially designed to give them nothing. And so that's also a very important point, because as you'll see, some of these choices that these women did make, it made those choices even more extraordinary given what life was like for women at that time. So I said earlier that Henry was married to his first wife for 24 years. Now, that does not mean that he was a gem throughout that marriage. He always had mistresses. His earliest known mistress was a woman named Bessie Blount. She came to the royal court around 1512, and she was a maid of honor to Catherine of Aragon, who was Henry's first wife. She was an exceptional dancer and singer, and her and Henry's affair lasted about 5 years, which was interestingly longer than most of his marriages. Here's something crazy. In June of 1519, she gave Henry a son. He was publicly acknowledged, and it did prove that Henry could father a healthy boy. So, you know, back to what we were just talking about, the problem wasn't Henry, it was his wife, Catherine. Total bullshit. So after the birth, Bessie was retired from the affair. Like, what retired? So she had given him what he wanted, a boy, and she was sent on her way. Unfortunately, that son got tuberculosis and he died when he was 17. But he had been being groomed as a potential heir to Henry's throne. Another affair that is of note is a woman named Mary Boleyn. She actually was Henry's second wife's older sister. She was Henry's mistress before he became obsessed with the younger sister. And she was married, but a lot of people think that that marriage was arranged to provide cover for the affair that she was having with Henry. So the rumors were that maybe one or both of her children were fathered by Henry, but they were never acknowledged. And here's something else that was crazy about this time. This created a legal problem later on, something called affinity, which is having been intimate with one sister, it technically made marriage to the other invalid under law. Like, huh? Okay, wild. So here's the good stuff. And I know what you're all waiting for, because this is the part where I was like, now we're at the meat of the story. So we're going to talk about the wives. And also, I thought it would be fun to add in like what it reveals about Henry as this journey goes on. So Catherine of Aragon, I don't know if I'm saying that right, if it's Aragon or Aragon, but she was with him for 24 years. She was Spanish royalty, daughter of Ferdinand and Isabella, and she was originally married to Henry's brother Arthur when she was 15. Now remember, Arthur died when he was 15. So they literally got married when they were both 15 and he died a few months later. Like, so sad. So Catherine always said that her marriage to Arthur was never consummated. So that's important because of how this story unfolds. So she married Henry when she was 23 and Henry was 17. It sounds like for the first decade, they were actually really happy. She served as regent when he went off to war in France. She oversaw England's victory over Scotland, and she sent Henry the bloodied cloak of his enemy after they won. So she was definitely his partner. Like, how ruthless is that? Like, hey, look, we won. Here's the bloodied cloak of your enemy for a souvenir. And also think about like in like 500 years ago, you know, that had to be sent like via horse. Like, it probably took weeks to get there. So anyway, Catherine became pregnant 6 times. And unfortunately, 5 of those either died in infancy or they were stillborn. So the only surviving child that they had was Princess Mary. So get this. Henry decides to seek an annulment, saying that their marriage was never valid. And so my whole thing was like, okay, how was annulment an option after all of that time? But his argument was a Bible verse, Leviticus 20:21. If a man marries his brother's wife, it is an act of impurity. He has uncovered the nakedness of his brother. They shall be childless. So basically he was saying, like, because she had already married my brother, this is why we haven't had a son, because we're cursed. But Catherine had always said, like, no, Arthur and I, like, never consummated the marriage. So this is not, like, this is wrong. Like, you can't say that you want to annul our marriage because of this, because I never had sex with your brother. So the problem was, a previous pope had given Henry special permission to marry Catherine, specifically because of this brother issue. So Henry was now asking a current pope to say the previous pope was wrong, which, like, we don't want to have pope on pope drama in addition to annulment drama after 24 years. So again, Catherine maintained that that marriage to Arthur was never consummated, so that the biblical argument couldn't apply. And she held firm on that until she died. So the pope ended up refusing the annulment. So what was Henry's solution? He broke from Rome entirely, declared himself supreme head of the Church of England, appointed his own archbishop, and annulled the marriage in 1533. And that was the English Reformation. So he literally created a new church because he wanted to leave his wife. Like, do you think that is so insane? Because I do. Like, he just basically said, okay, guess what? We're not dealing with Catholicism anymore. Bye-bye, Rome. Bye-bye, popes. Bye-bye, all of these decades and more than that, centuries of religion. And I'm going to go make my new thing and do it my way because I want to leave my wife. All right. Catherine straight up would not agree to the annulment, and she didn't go quietly because she was like, I am not playing along. So she ended up being exiled in 1531 and unfortunately moved to not a nice neighborhood. And she was, this is super sad, she was forbidden from seeing her daughter for the last 4 to 5 years of her life. So when she eventually died at 50, she was still insisting that she was the true queen. But we gotta hand it to Catherine. She was a woman with no army and no political allies, but she somehow made the King of England restructure his nation's religion because she simply would not bend and give him what he wanted. So let's talk about wife number two, what she reveals about Henry, his obsession and capacity for destruction. So she was born in 1501, and she spent her youth at the French court. She was fluent in French and a skilled musician and a sophisticated dresser. She was said to not be a classical beauty by Tudor standards, but she was magnetic, witty, confident, politically sharp. Her sister Mary, like we spoke about earlier, had already been Henry's mistress, and Anne watched what had happened to her. She was used, discarded, and forgotten. Henry began pursuing Anne around 1526. She was Catherine's lady-in-waiting. But here's where our girl Anne is just like, nope, we're not doing this your way. We're going to do this my way. She refused to sleep with him for 6 years because she had already seen what had happened to her sister. So she understood that being a mistress was a dead end. She was the one that Henry sent all of the love letters to, and they even still have them somewhere in some museum. And she basically laid down terms for him. She said, we get married, I get the crown, or nothing. I think that this is really important because she turned a physical pursuit into a political negotiation. She had some strategy. She knew what she wanted. So in 1533, they got married. She was already pregnant. She gave him a daughter, Elizabeth, who was future Elizabeth I. She also had a series of miscarriages. 5 days after Henry's jousting accident, she miscarried a male child. At the time, Henry had already been pursuing Jane Seymour, who was Anne's lady-in-waiting. Henry was ready to move on. In May of 1536, Henry had Anne arrested. She was charged with adultery, incest with her brother, and treason. Most historians believe, though, that all of the charges were fabricated, and their marriage was annulled 2 days before Anne's execution, where she was beheaded on May 19th of 1536. Like, talk about the legal system moving quick. If it was the beginning of May when she was arrested and then beheaded only like 2 or so weeks later, good Lord. The same intensity that drove Henry to pursue Anne for 6 years was the same intensity that led him to fabricate charges and have her killed when she no longer served his purpose. Ugh, jeez. And this was the part where I thought about his cancer sign and intensity playing a role in his actions. Up next, wife number three, Jane Seymour. What she reveals about Henry. His sentimentality. He could only love women who didn't challenge him. So Jane was lady-in-waiting for actually both Catherine and Anne. Her mother and Anne's mother were first cousins. She was quiet, reserved, and considered plain, the opposite of Anne's fire. Henry married her 11 days after Anne's execution. Like, 11 days. I mean, this man is savage. And how scary for Jane. She's probably like, okay, now I have to marry this guy who just cut off his wife's head less than 2 weeks ago. Like, sounds great. Can't fucking wait. The following year, she gave birth to Prince Edward, future Edward VI, at Hampton Court. Her birth had complications, though, and she died 12 days later, likely from some kind of fever, and she was only 28 or 29. Like, how sad. So she's lady-in-waiting to his first two wives, watches one of them just basically get exiled after she refuses to have the marriage end, and then she ends up, you know, living in squalor, watches the second one get her head chopped off, then, you know, gives birth to a son, which was probably a huge relief because she's like, okay, great, now we have an heir. Like, I did something right, even though it's literally not up to her. And then boom, she dies less than 2 weeks later. Henry, though, has always called her his true wife. And the reason that she's his favorite, she gave him what he wanted. And then she died before anything could happen that would make him see her in a different light. So she never really had an opportunity to disappoint him. Jeez. All right. Up next, wife number four, Anne of Cleves. What she reveals about Henry, his vanity. So Anne was a German princess. This was definitely a political marriage that was arranged to ally with Protestant German states. Dude, Henry is just the fucking worst. He sent painter Hans Holbein to do her portrait, and he liked what Hans produced. However, when she arrived in England, he found her unattractive in person, and I guess he would talk rather poorly about her. Now, this is so dating app coded because it's like, you see photos of somebody and you're like, oh my God, they look great. And then you meet the person in person and you're like, wait a minute. I mean, how many times have people lied, right? And I'm not saying this was her lying, obviously. Somebody painted a portrait, which again is vastly different than putting old pictures on dating apps, but I still think it's kind of like dating app coded and kind of funny. So they married in January of 1540, reportedly never consummated the marriage, and Henry wanted out within weeks. So Anne was pretty smart. She saw what had happened to the women who fought. So for Anne, she was like, okay, what can I do here to get out of this? So she agreed that the marriage was never consummated, and she accepted a gracious annulment. And she also had some skills in her, and she negotiated herself a very generous settlement. She got properties, she got income, and she got title of the king's beloved sister, which when I first read that, I was like, okay, that's odd. What does that mean? And she got that title because she amicably agreed to the separation, ensuring a peaceful, non-confrontational end to their union, and it allowed her to continue living in England. So, I mean, I guess this is good because, you know, all of this stuff, it seems to be very public in nature. And here's what I mean by that. Like, they talk so openly about like, oh, well, we never consummated the marriage, or like his mistresses, they were known mistresses. When he had that son with one of them, you know, it was known, like he publicly claimed that like this what was going on. So I guess it's just very common at the time to talk about your sex life in a way that made, you know, titles like these not weird. Right? Because like here, if you're divorcing somebody, you're not all of a sudden going to be like, well, he's just like my brother. Like, no, that's a little weird. You guys were married for years and certainly had a lot of sex. So anyway, she went on to live independently and comfortably for 17 more years. And she actually outlived Henry and all five other wives. She died in 1557 at 42. And fun fact about her is that she's the only wife that is buried in Westminster Abbey. Anne of Cleves negotiated the best divorce settlement of the Tudor era. In a world where women couldn't own property, couldn't initiate divorce, couldn't refuse a king, she traded a marriage she didn't want for financial independence and freedom. And she walked away with her head and her wealth. I mean, hey, she didn't get beheaded. So, I mean, I don't even know. I think that is worth any amount of money. And she also got money. So good on you, Anne. I mean, I can't believe that we're still talking about wives, but we are. So wife number five, Catherine Howard. What she reveals about Henry, his delusion. So Catherine was the first cousin of the second wife, Anne Boleyn. She was only 16 or 17 when she married Henry, and he was 49. So this is not that great. Following her mother's death, her father had a lot of financial struggles, and so she was placed in the care of the Duchess of Norfolk, which was kind of a finishing school for young noble women. Unfortunately, there was not a lot of oversight at the house, so she ended up sexually involved with her music teacher when she was about 13, and then with another man when she was like between 14 and 15. So if you're looking at this through a modern lens, she was essentially groomed and exploited by older men from a very young age. And when she came to the court, she was a lady in waiting for Anne of Cleves, and Henry noticed her immediately. They got married July of 1540. Here's where things really went down. The following year, her sexual history before the marriage was uncovered and reported to the king. It also revealed that she was probably in another relationship with someone else who was out and about within the court. So at first, Henry was like, I don't believe it. Apparently, he broke down in tears, but then that grief turned to rage. He had one of the men beheaded, and one of them was hung, drawn, and quartered, which I had to stop and think, like, what does that mean? And I didn't look it up because I quite frankly, like, don't need a more in-depth description, because to me, what that says is like, they hung him, they sliced him up so all his blood came out, and then they cut him into four, which is absolutely terrifying. And then Catherine ended up beheaded in February of 1542, and she was probably about 18 or 19 years old. So of all of the wives, definitely the saddest, most unfortunate story. She was a teenager with a history of being preyed upon, married to an aging, ill king that she couldn't refuse, and then she was executed when her past was exposed. And, you know, this is kind of crazy because this one in particular really ties into so much that we talk about on the Scarlet Edit, which is being shamed for past decisions, being judged, not being allowed to live and to still go after things in life that you want simply because of a past decision. And I mean, this, you know, was even more ruthless because the king had the ability to cut off her head, and he did. I mean, even saying those words is so wild to me. The king had the ability to cut off her head, and he did. Like, I am so just turned off, mind blown, and equally grateful that we no longer behead people in today's world. Okay, guys. I'm like, here we are, one more wife, but this was the last one. So, wife number 6, Catherine Parr, what she reveals about Henry, a man at the end being managed. So, Catherine, completely polar opposite from the prior Catherine. 3 Catherines, you guys, that's a lot. This Catherine was 31 years old. She had already been widowed twice, and she... poor thing. She actually was in a genuinely loving relationship with a man named Thomas Seymour's. No. Seymour. Thomas Seymour. Jane Seymour, wife number 3's brother. You know, this is another crazy thing about this time is that the population wasn't that big. So there's so many people that are related to other people. I mean, this is a big web of a handful of families. But Catherine and Thomas were planning to get married, but then Henry came in and decided that he wanted her. So she was sent away to marry him. Catherine wasn't a woman ignoring red flags. She was a woman who had no choice. You don't say no to the king. And she knew exactly what she was walking into. She'd watched it all happen. 2 wives beheaded, 1 exiled, and 1 died. This wasn't a proposal. It was a command. I mean, oh my God. Like, I couldn't even, I didn't think about this until right now. But yeah, she knew that 2 of his wives had had their heads cut off. Ah, it gives me the chills just saying that. So she definitely used survival as a strategy. She was intelligent, she was educated, and she had very strong Protestant beliefs. She persuaded Henry to restore Mary, his daughter from first Catherine, wife number 1, and Elizabeth, his daughter from Anne, wife number 2, into the line of succession. And so this was really important just for the future of England. She served as regent when Henry went to war with France. She was the first woman to publish a book under her own name in English. However, in 1546, her religious enemies convinced Henry to sign a warrant for her arrest. Like, what? But she had survival instincts, and she knew that she could convince him to drop the warrant. She went to him. She told him that she only debated religion because she wanted to learn from his superior wisdom and to distract him from the physical pain that he was in. So she fully just performed an beautiful act of submission. He accepted it, and he did drop the warrant. She swallowed her pride because she literally wanted to keep her head. Henry died January 28th, 1547, at the age of 55. Within months, Catherine married Thomas Seymour because he was the man that she had loved all along. Unfortunately, she died just a few months later from complications after childbirth. She was 36. Fun fact about her is that with 4 husbands total, she's England's most married queen. Dude, it just makes me so sad that like some of these women who like got to a good point, then they like died so quickly. Oh, it breaks my heart. In closing, Henry VIII had 6 wives. He pursued every single one of them while still married to the last. He was writing love letters to Anne Boleyn for 6 years while married to Catherine of Aragon. He was courting Jane Seymour while Anne Boleyn was still queen. He was chasing Catherine Howard while still married to Anne of Cleves. Catherine Parr was in love with someone else entirely when Henry decided she was next. He was never present in what he had because he was always fixated on what was next. And that cycle, obsession, pursuit, disappointment, discard, it never changed. The women changed, the circumstances changed, but the pattern was exactly the same every single time. And that's the thing about patterns. They don't stay in the 1500s. The person who's always looking, always chasing the next thing, who makes you feel like the center of their world until they get what they want and then suddenly you're not enough anymore. That's not history. That's a text that you've gotten. That's a relationship that you've been in. And if he wanted to, he would. Henry proved that 500 years ago. The man was running an entire country, fighting wars, breaking from the Catholic Church, and he still found the time. So the next time someone tells you that they're too busy, they're not too busy. You're just not the priority. But here's the part of this story that actually matters. Every single one of these women, in a world where they had no legal rights, no property, no ability to say no to a king, found a way to play the hand they were dealt. Some of them played it brilliantly, and that's not a history lesson. That's a reminder that women have always had power. It's just how you play the game. This wraps up the first month of Affairs Through the Ages. If you have been here and listened along as I've been working to put this series together and figure out the best way to present these episodes, thank you. I have really enjoyed doing this. It is a different type of storytelling and it challenges me in a different way. But I do think that there are things to be learned from these affairs of past. There's something to be said for hearing it through a different perspective, right? I'm sure through a lot of these things that you guys have either read articles or read history books and know a lot about these relationships that I've talked about, but you've never heard it from my perspective, or you've never heard it from something that stuck out to me that I decided to dig a little deeper into. And I think that's what's neat about storytelling, is because you get somebody new's perspective every time you hear a little bit about it. So I'm hopeful that it causes us all to think. I'm hopeful that it causes us all to learn a little bit. And I'm hopeful that, you know, we can see how women have navigated through these different relationships over time. All right, everybody. That is this week's episode of Affairs Through the Ages. I hope you enjoyed this one as much as I did putting it together. So if you haven't already, please subscribe to the show, follow along so you get new updates in your podcast app every Monday and every Thursday. This is Affairs Through the Ages, my signature series that comes out every Monday. The Scarlet Edit episodes come out every Thursday, and I am cooking up some really great stuff for the Thursday episodes, in addition to some great guest episodes that I have both in the queue and on deck to record. So I am so excited to keep bringing you more and more Scarlet Edit stories and conversations. So as always, thank you so much for being here. It means the world to me, and we will talk to you on Thursday. Today is my birthday. Da-na-na-na-na. It's my birthday too, yeah. Da-na-na-na-na. I don't know the rest of that song, so I'm gonna go. Bye.